All right, let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina hotline, talk to one of our favorite guys because he can cover it all. It's Dustin McComas, orangebloods.com. Dustin, how you doing on this Thursday?
Still trying to digest everything that was yesterday's sporting event and then looking ahead to Texas OU. So it's brain overload right now.
Yeah, I bet.
Dustin, how much of this with the Dodgers and mismanaging? I mean, look, Roberts has done this before, and I definitely want you to get into all that and what you would have done. But how much of this is – you and I talked about it throughout the year. It's like they were still protecting Kenley Jansen in his ego, and they had issues in the back end, but he was not the answer. It almost felt like it was that same version of old respect and respect for what the guy's stuff used to be with Kershaw.
Yeah, and there's a lot to unpack there. I mean, we know, we talked about it all the time, that they could have benefited from going out and getting a big-time bullpen arm at the deadline. But I'm not sure how much that would have mattered if the ultimate issue is the usage. And, you know, last night was just – it was air after air after air, and it felt like Roberts was trying to make Kershaw something that he's not. Like, this isn't the same. Clayton Kershaw was a good pitcher this year. He was actually a really good pitcher. But Clayton Kershaw's average fastball velocity is 90.3 miles per hour now. Back in 2015, it was 94.2. This is not the same guy in terms of stuff. Yeah, the spin on the breaking stuff's better as he's learned more and matured and things like that. But he's not. This isn't Max Scherzer running out there. This isn't Patrick Corbin with 95 in the tank and then that devastating slider. So I think that he was trying to force Kershaw to be something that he wasn't. Which, okay, you're still, it's 3-3, you know. And then Maeda comes in and proves that, hey, he should have been the guy initially that got in there when he struck out the next three guys. You got Kolarik and Jensen, and I know Jensen still hasn't been the same, but he's still a guy that's pitched a lot in a lot of those situations before. My biggest issue with all of that was you brought out Joe Kelly for a second inning. You know, dancing with Joe Kelly in that situation alone, you got to feel like you just won the lotto if you can get a perfect inning out of him. Right? All right, we're done. Let's get him out of here. You know, we've got what we got. But Roberts got fooled by how good that inning was. So he brings him back out there for a second inning, which I know the data that they have says that will be a bad move. And he's got Kolarik and Jensen up in the bullpen. And then you get to the point where, okay, there's guys on. You're intentionally walking Soto. So not only did Kolarik not face him with Kershaw on the mound, you don't let him face him again with a second opportunity coming up, and then you load the bases, and then you leave Joe Kelly in the game when you've got two guys hot in the bullpen. At least with a – I mean, I know Kolarik's a left-handed pitcher, but he's a sinker guy. He's a guy that you pound the ball into the ground against. You know, why not bring him in even to face Howie Kendrick? It's just – it was air after air after air. And you said it, Dave Roberts has a track record of this. And I think that, you know, last night was so bad with a 106-win team that was a favorite, that was at home, that their starter handed their bullpen a 3-1 lead. I don't think Dave Roberts is going to be able to survive this.
Wow. And he just signed, I believe, a 4-year deal,
yep.
Right, Dustin?
Back
this
in
year?
December,
yeah, back in December,
like,
maybe?
I think he's got 3 years left on that deal, yeah. But, you know, the money is not an issue for the Dodgers. The bigger issue for the Dodgers is they keep winning the division. They don't win the World Series.
Yeah. That's
true.
Important.
No,
that's important to them.
He nailed it.
Yep, that's right. Last time they did it would have been Kirk Gibson, 88, and going around as an old man. That's the last time they pulled that off.
Yeah, so, Dustin, what else about the game? I mean, I thought that it was good to see Howie Kendrick do that. But, you know, the Dodgers also had some other problems. They're big bats and guys that had been hitting – didn't seem to really come through. Is that just facing really good starting pitching?
I think that's a product of it, yeah. I mean, A.J. Pollock, what was he? Like 0 for 12 with 10 strikeouts? I mean, they just, you know, Cody Bellinger, I think he's over 70 postseason at-bats now without a homer or something like that, or maybe that was just at home, I'm not sure, but he's got a long streak of not driving the ball out of the yard. So, yeah, it's difficult to beat the Nationals when your best bats are not consistently coming through. Max Muncy's not a part of that. Max Muncy was awesome. He was really, really good. But I don't think Seager was very good as well. You know, they put a lot of pressure on their pitchers to really, really perform against a good baseball team. Let's not forget the Nationals, the way they finished the season with that absurd record in their last, like, 100 games or 110 games or something like that. I mean, they're a good baseball team. And I think what stood out to me about them is Dave Martinez looks like the guy everybody thought he was going to be as a manager, a guy that was really hyped up, before he got that managerial job as somebody that was going to be the next star in that position. Well, he looked like it this series. Anthony Rendon is incredible. Anthony Rendon, I think that you can make a really good case that of any hitter in baseball right now, he might be the most difficult guy to get out. He doesn't really swing and miss ever. I mean, yeah, he does it occasionally, but compared to, you know, some of the top hitters in the game, you just don't really fool that guy. And last night was another display of that. And the Juan Soto being Juan Soto, but just the way the Nationals managed that series, I mean, they got just enough out of Scherzer in the bullpen role. They got just enough out of him as a starter. They didn't push him too much. They didn't push Strasburg too much. They got Corbin back on track. And Daniel Hudson, I mean, he was throwing the ball really well in Toronto. They basically got him for nothing. They started using him a little bit differently. Man, what a revelation he's been for them in that bullpen. Suddenly they've got a guy that they feel confident in handing the baseball. And then Sean Doolittle looked a little bit better, more like the guy that was so good earlier that season. So the Nationals are a really good baseball team, but the Dodgers picked the wrong time to have some big managerial errors and also for some of those big bats to go silent.
Talking with Dustin McComas, orangebloods.com. So, Dustin, the National League thing got blown up for everybody, but the American League idea that everybody had is obviously still in place. Astros going into Game 5 tonight. Give me the perfect A.J. Hinch plan for tonight, assuming that Cole's not going to go complete game and just do it all himself. What do you think AJ Hinch needs to be thinking about tonight in terms of situational moments with his bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, Gerrit Cole might be the most bankable pitcher in baseball right now in terms of knowing what you're going to get. He's just showing no signs at all of slowing down, and he's going to be on full rest. I think you're expecting too much if you think that it's a given he's going to get to the eighth inning, just because he is such a strikeout guy, which sometimes that can inflate your pitch count and all those sorts of things. So I think he needs to have a plan ready for what do I do maybe perhaps in the middle of the seventh? What am I doing in the eighth? What am I doing in the ninth? But I think A.J. Hinch's biggest challenge is going to be maneuvering his lineup against what Tampa Bay does with its pitching, because Tampa Bay, this is not foreign territory for them. They're going to get what they can get out of whoever starts, and then they're going to throw everything at you. It might be an inning. It might be a batter. It might be two innings. But they're not. They know how to manage these types of games. They know how to manage. You know, they treat a lot of their regular season games as if you would a game five in this situation, where they'll use who they need to use to win the baseball game, and then they'll move on. So I think that's the challenge for Hinch is, what lineup does he use, and how does he use his bench down the stretch? Because I think this is going to be another close baseball game. I think Tampa's going to get good pitching again. I think Gerrit Cole's going to be really, really good. And I think it's going to come down to who can get one of those that big hit or two late in the game. And that might come down to how Houston uses that bench, because Tampa's going to throw a lot of arms at them again.
They are, and, man, they're talented. We know how talented those arms are. I think Houston, they already knew, but maybe some Houston fans are kind of finding that out. Nick Anderson, Pagan, Castillo, you go through it. Whose bullpen would you rather have? Which one's deeper, the Yankees or the Rays?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would probably give the slight edge to Tampa, just because I think they're deeper. And they've operated all year like they're deeper. You know, this isn't unusual for them. You know, you need me to come in the third inning? Cool, no big deal. All right, we're gonna go left, right, left here in the eighth inning? Fine, we've got the guys. We've done this. So I think you look at the Yankees in terms of pure stuff. I mean, they've got a lot of that in their bullpen, and they're kind of using it in a similar way to Tampa, just because their starting pitching hasn't been great to end the season. But I like Tampa's bullpen being a little bit deeper. They just have so many options, and they're so used to coming in whatever role. I mean, those guys are just programmed to understand that, hey, we might need to call on you at any point in the game. We need you to be ready to do it.
They're playing with house money and psychologically with momentum. It feels like Tampa's got nothing to lose right now. It's obviously important to always get up and be able to use your bullpen effectively in the right way. But is it even more important to get up early in this game and get something good going, just for the psychological factor for this team and this crowd?
Yeah, I think so. I think that we saw it, unfortunately for Chad, we saw it in that Atlanta game yesterday, where that place was rocking and rolling, and it was fired up, and bam, it was silent, and it was dead silent for a long, long time besides some boos, I think. So I think the important thing for Houston is, you know, if Gerrit Cole comes out and he strikes out a couple batters in that first inning, crowd gets a little fired up. Even if they don't score a run early, they get some guys on base, they hit some balls hard, they keep that crowd into it. I think that that's a big deal. You don't want to get a situation where, you know, somebody pops Cole for a solo homer in the first inning and Glasnow comes out and strikes out the side. I mean, that's the sort of thing that can kill a mood in a crowd real quick. And these things, I mean, they do play a role. You know, it doesn't determine the outcome, but there's no doubt you can feel that energy and that momentum in the stadium. And Houston's been so good at home. And on the other side, it's been bad at Tampa. I mean, it's kind of like a house of horrors for them. So them getting back home behind that crowd, they've been so, so good with that crowd. I think the start is always important, but I think it's an especially important start when you're talking about a winner-take-all game.
Talking with Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com, at DMcComasOB. If you want to follow on Twitter, check out the cool stuff at Orange Bloods, a lot of good podcasts and stuff. Also, Dustin and Kevin doing a baseball podcast you definitely want to check out. Plus, it is a War Room night on a Thursday night at Orange Blood, so a lot going on.
That's Extra Bases.
Extra Bases, the podcast you'll want to check out there with these two guys. Dustin, switching to football here, Texas and Oklahoma, give me the simple formula. Texas beats Oklahoma on Saturday. If they do, what in your mind?
You know, I whenever I think about this game, I keep going back to just the physicality and the aggressiveness. And if Texas is, for four quarters, the more physical team, the more aggressive team, the more confident team, I think that they're going to win the football game. If Oklahoma can match Texas there, which has been an issue in the Cotton Bowl, it wasn't an issue in the Big 12 championship game, different situation, you're trying to avenge a loss, you're not playing in that same type of atmosphere. But in the Cotton Bowl, especially the last 2 years, Texas has been the far more physical football team. And when, you know, we saw two teams that were kind of close to even, unlike 2017, the result went Texas' way. So I think that if they play that way for four quarters, I think they can win. Now, we can talk about the defense and the offense. The offense is going to score points, and they're probably not going to commit many turnovers, maybe one. We just haven't seen them commit many turnovers. So they're going to keep the team in the game. And I don't know if the Texas defense can win Texas the game. It could certainly lose them the game, I think, but I don't know if it could win them the game. It really just comes down to so much of this game is, you know, who blinks. You know, we saw last year Kyler Murray blinked for just a little bit. You know, he had that costly interception. You know, Texas didn't really blink until it was up 21 points in the fourth quarter. And by then it was too much for Oklahoma to overcome. So if Texas takes that same type of mentality that we've seen the last 2 years with this football team, which I think is closer. I know Las Vegas doesn't reflect that, but I think it's closer to being even than the last 2 years. I think that that'll be enough to get them the win.
Sounds like starting left tackle Eric Swinson, it's going to be tough for him to play in this game. That'll push out a guard in R.J. Proctor to take on that spot. Adrian Ealy, the right tackle, is questionable. There were five NFL guys protecting Kyler Murray last year, including Creed Humphrey, who's back. Is that something Texas and Todd Orlando can take advantage of?
It is. You know, from what I saw of that Kansas game, I didn't watch all of it, but I did watch a good chunk of it. They got to Jalen Hurts a little bit. It was a frustrated Oklahoma offensive line. You know, I think that, you know, they weren't used to getting, you know, having issues like that. You could see it too. I think they had a couple personal foul penalties as well. They just want a dominant unit in a situation where they're often dominant. So to me, the big question about this game is from Todd Orlando's perspective. We've seen him go after the quarterback a lot this year, LSU. It didn't work very well. Granted, LSU is a terrific offense. We've also seen him now more recently kind of play more zone and pick and choose when he's going to go after the quarterback. So I'll be curious to see, is he going to stick to that? You know, these adjustments that they've made over the last three games where they're not the team that's coming after you almost every single snap. Or is he looking at this Oklahoma offensive line and thinking, if I can get to Jalen Hurts, or if I can just get the ball out of his hands quickly, you know, and keep him from hanging in the pocket and tucking the run and all those sorts of things, is that the best way for my defense to try to win this football game? So I think that, you know, that there's definitely a situation there where Oklahoma could have a little bit of trouble with their offensive line. But as we know, if you're only rushing three, it's easier to handle those issues along the offensive line. Now, if you're constantly bringing 5, maybe 6 sometimes, maybe even 7. We'll see. But we just haven't seen that often from Texas ever since that LSU game.
Dustin, we all know this is a game where guys can make their name and kind of just put their signature on it. Do you think DeSean Jameson, with that performance in Morgantown, both in obviously the defensive side, but also in the return game, which he's shown off this year too, you think he might be ready to put his name in Texas OU history?
I think it's a good pick. You know, if you're thinking about guys that are kind of not necessarily under the radar, but trying to establish themselves as key players, I mean, he'd be one of the first few guys I think of. You know, well, I know the Texas defense didn't play perfectly against West Virginia, but what I saw when I went back and watched again was it looked like a group, mainly the defensive backs, that were playing with a lot more confidence. I don't know if that was West Virginia. I don't know if it's a product of just more reps. I don't know if just being on the same page. What I think is this is a defense that's it's becoming more in sync. It really wasn't in sync much early in the season, especially when we bring pressure. It just seemed like guys were a step hesitant or a step slow or a step unsure of themselves. Now you've got B.J. Foster back playing with a ton of confidence. DeSean Jameson's playing with a ton of confidence. I mean, I'm totally okay with that guy committing a pass interference because it comes from him trusting his eyes and going after making a big play. And then later in the game, he has 2 interceptions. So the Texas secondary is banged up, and that's still an area I think Texas fans should be a little bit concerned about when you're playing arguably the best offense in the country and the best receiver group in the country. But I think this Texas secondary group is going to enter this contest playing with a lot of confidence. It'll be interesting to see if that continues against Oklahoma.
10.5, 11-point line. Dustin, what would you do with that, first of all? And then secondly, what do you think happens in this game? Who wins?
I'm taking Texas in terms of the line. Not only Tom Herman's track record as an underdog, but you have to go back to 2012 since Oklahoma's covered in this game in the Cotton Bowl. I know they're covered in the Big 12 championship game, but this is just a different game. It's just a different atmosphere. There's nothing like it in college football. So I definitely would take Texas to cover in that situation. I've gone back and forth. You know, last week I was going to pick Oklahoma. Now I'm just not too sure. I just keep going back to the fact that when Tom Herman has a team in that stadium, in this situation, they've been the tougher team. They've been the more physical team. They've been the more confident team 2 years in a row. And I'm not sure if that changes. So I'm kind of, you know, I feel like a politician right now going back and forth with, I think that if I might pick Texas right now, I might change my mind before Friday morning. But I think this is going to be another really, really good football game. I really do. Probably the same type of close score as the last 2 years, although it might not look like last year where one team is just way ahead. And even 2017, Oklahoma was up 20-0 in that game. I think this is going to be more of a back-and-forth affair. But I might take Texas if you made me pick right now.
Dustin, also real quick before we let you go, do you think the Astros get it done tonight and go to the ALCS?
I do. I like them at home. I like Garrett Cole on full rest. It's really, really difficult to pick against Garrett Cole. I mean, when he was last on the mound, it was one of the most dominant playoff performances I've ever seen in my life. I think he gave up 3 hits. One of those hits was 98 miles an hour on the outside corner. I mean, he was awesome. I don't think he had a stretch where he was bad for consecutive hitters. He might not even ever been bad to one hitter. So I can't pick against Garrett Cole tonight. I've got the Astros winning.
That makes total baseball sense and eyeball sense if you've watched Garrett Cole. Dustin McComas, orangebloods.com, at DMcComasOB on Twitter. Dustin, enjoy baseball tonight and football over the weekend, and we always appreciate the time, man.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, buddy.
Great stuff with Dustin McComas. By the way, did you ever see the video of Dustin and his wife and the gender?
Oh yeah,
gender
oh
reveal?
Yeah. I was all over that.
That's a solid gender reveal idea.
It's a great one.
I had not seen. Maybe you're the one that showed me that.
I think I did.
My wife was confused today when I said you showed me, right? Maybe you're the one that showed me. Yeah, doing the baseball bat, hitting the ball, and then the blue dust.
Did
flies.
You see the Marlins pitcher?
That was cool.
I think it was a Marlins pitcher.
Uh-uh.
It was a pitcher that had one a couple days ago.
Yeah,
and they were trying, I guess, to beat a balloon with a bat. I don't know why you just wouldn't poke it, but they were trying to like hit it so it would explode.
Yeah,
and the balloon flew off, and it got even better. This guy's trying to he gets on the gate because he's trying to grab it, and then he falls off.
Oh no!
Oh no! It was.
Oh my god!
It was like a sketch.
Did we ever see what it was?
No, it went away.
Just gone?
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Should have shot it down or something. Shoot it with a gun at that point.